Welcome. Who just joined?
It's Kim. How about everybody?
Kim, hi. How are you? Did you work out something with access to the Telebridge? What are you doing now with telephone access? And did my note...
Yes, I'm using my home phone tonight. I want to see if it's as good a quality as the cell phone.
Okay. It sounds very good. Did my response to your question make sense?
Yes. No, completely. I just wanted to ask, because normally when we phone America, it's very expensive. But with this line, they told me that it's not. So I'm relaxed again.
Okay. Well, good. Good. Well,
how's it going?
Bring us up to date with a progress note. What's happening? What are you bringing about?
Is that for me now?
Yes. Uh-huh.
So I've obviously been working through the material, and I'm enjoying it very much. I mean, some of it's conflicting to what I've, how can I say it, from what I've been saying, because my main byline on my book is around getting more meaning from your money. So a lot of what you're saying is you can't do that. So it's been a bit, I'm having to work through that. And then the next thing is I say, as my payoff line, money plus meaning equals magic. So
okay.
I'm working through how to understand that within the context of your work, and how do I explain that when I relate it to what I'm studying in your stuff.
Can you give an illustration of a specific conflict that you're experiencing or a contradiction that you experience? I'm curious about that.
Okay, so it's not as much as what, because everywhere that I'm reading and the stuff that I'm going through, you're saying money, you shouldn't give money meaning. So the work that I do with clients...
I do not mean to say that, because we always, all the time, give money meaning. 90 to 95% of our operating system is unconscious, and we are always giving money meaning. Money is a Rorschach. And the meaning of that Rorschach changes throughout the day. It changes depending on what mood we're in, of what state of mind we're in. We cannot help but give money meaning. So I'm curious how you concluded that from anything in the material.
Okay, so when a client comes to see me, they're obviously, as being a financial planner, they're coming to see me about money. So when they come and see me, what I'm saying to them, as long as they've got money in its right place, then we can start getting the money to work for them. And how I have the discussions with clients is, here's your money you've got. Let's try and see that we do the best work with this money so that it actually brings meaning into your life. I'm not saying that you're saying against that, but it's saying... I sometimes feel that perhaps I'm giving too much emphasis to the word meaning when it's coming to money.
Okay. I think I hear the difference. You're focusing on the financial aspects of money and what money can do for you, how you can make it work for them. My focus is on the internal money story, the internal meanings of money, how to understand a relationship with it, the whole way our brains are wired and our psyches are cued to determine various kinds of meanings and attributions to money. So the understanding of money and a money story is totally independent of the finances about money, or at least in terms of understanding it can be. Now, they can work in synchrony or they can be conflictual, but my focus is on the internal aspects, understanding a relationship with money and a money story, and I hear you focusing on the financial aspects of money as a vehicle, as an instrument of doing things with the financial components of that. Does that distinction sound like it captures the differences that you're seeing?
It does, but I do. So what I always do with every client who comes to see me, we work on what is their memory around money. Because if I know what their memory around money is, I know normally whether they're using it for the right things or not, whether they are overusing it to gain power or whether they are overusing it to control people. So I do go into it, but definitely not at your level. And I'm really enjoying it, and it's even making me question a lot about myself internally and personally about the work that I'm doing.
But that makes sense. I understand that. And I think there are a number of other vectors to use to get at the meaning and the money story in addition to memory. But that's definitely a powerful component, because memories are how we understand, how we organize, and our brains seek patterns and create memories. So I think that's definitely a component of it that can be very powerful. So it'll be interesting to see.
And you're definitely deepening it for me.
Ah, okay. Well, terrific. I'll be interested to see what you think as we begin today looking at the way of really deconstructing a money story, the seven steps, the roadmap process, in order to really understand it and to construct a new story or a revision of a story. So this is looking at the elements of how we create stories, and to really understand that process and to look at the elements, the components of it. So it'll be interesting to see if this is useful to you in terms of what you do.
Keith, and I just, for the record, everything that I've done with you so far has been very useful. It's not useful at all. It's just making me question stuff at a deeper level, and which I'm already starting to do with clients without knowing the outcome. So every week I'm very excited about the work we're going to do.
Well, at the end of every seminar, if you have questions and are confused, then my work for the day is done.
Okay.
So
I love to be challenged.
This is exactly what we do as mentor coaches, is to perturbate an existing story. Somebody has an intact story. Now, remember that whenever someone is experiencing things, they're not in a story. That's our metaphor of story. Someone, a client, does not inhabit a story or experience or create a story. It's just the way things are. A story is a metaphor to give us leverage to understand, and a metaphor to talk about things. But for the client, you know, it's not a story. It's just the way, it's reality. So this is a way simply of finding a way to create an interface, and especially using the roadmap, that may be helpful for both people in a collaborative way. So
excellent. And also you must understand when I get on to speak to you, I've just woken up because I go to sleep before I speak to you.
Because
it's the middle of the night here.
I know. It's a challenge, and I'm deeply appreciative and impressed that you do what you do to join us live time. That's really amazing. I'm very impressed.
Thank you.
Well, thank you. Well, let's check in. Who else has arrived?
Hey, Dave. It's Tom from Connecticut.
Hey, welcome,
how are
Tom.
You?
Bring us up to date. What's happening, my man?
Enjoying the work, enjoying the reading. As I'm reading it, I'm reflecting on some of my own behaviors and thoughts and feelings about money. I am also in my head and slowly on paper putting together what a class would look like that I hope to teach shortly after I finish collaborating with you. So very excited, enjoying the new learning.
Terrific. What's the composition of the class as you envision it?
So I've been on the phone with at least two right now, different parks and recreational organizations close by to where I live, to start talking about what they need from me to teach a class. I think the first time I do it, I want to do a 4-session class, and then on my feedback form, allow individuals that have taken my class to see if they want to further their own knowledge on the topic, and then maybe offer an 8-week class. You know, as I'm going through the reading, I'm looking at the syllabus, You know, I'm feeling like the class, first class would be defining what a money story is, helping classmates that are in the class with me to understand their own money story, bring awareness to what money means to them. The second class, currently as I think about it, is after awareness has been brought to their own money stories, their own behaviors and thoughts and feelings about money, to then look at new possibilities. I like how you talk about, you know, in the box, out of the box, paradigms, reframing, mindset. I don't think I'll get too much into the brain as much as you do, but I think the mindset of money and once they have awareness of it, you know, what are the possibilities? And then I think sessions 3 and 4 will be about developing your new money story and the habits and strategies and plans that they can put in place to do that. And then I think I close the class by asking them if they're interested in thinking and talking and learning about this on a deeper level, but also maintenance, to maintain that new money story, to see if folks want to sign up for an additional cycle of classes. That's where I'm at right now. That might change a week from today. It might change at the end of this call.
Well, that sounds fascinating. Thank you for sharing that. I think it'll be a significant contribution.
Thank you.
I think you're familiar with this, but there's a landing page that describes a brief version that's oriented toward consumers, not for training, that's www.newmoneystory.com. And it's a short series that kind of parallels what you're saying. So, you know, if you want to look at one other way of going about it, you know, that's certainly there, and you're welcome to, you know, use whatever of that might be useful. So, great. Thanks for sharing. Super. That sounds fascinating.
Thank you, Dr. Dave. Can I ask you a little bit more about that? It's
www.newmoneystory.com.
Okay, and so when I go there, what am I looking for?
You see a landing page for a program that I did initially as a teleseminar series, and I did it a number of times in order to get feedback and to refine it, to update it with the newest research until I recorded it. And I did, actually for that, I did a studio recording. So you see it available in one version on CDs plus a hard copy workbook, which is basically the roadmap system plus the new money story from our work. Another version is the PDF, which is useful for people outside North America because of the very prohibitive cost of shipping. And another version of that is an online retreat where people get a digital workbook copy and seminar each week for 5 weeks. So they're just different ways of going about it, but it's the same material, just in different venues.
And does that landing page have a name or a title?
It's Your New Money Story.
Is that the one I originally
heard? Take me to Mental Path.
It's on MentorPath, but you can go there directly, www.newmoneystory.com.
Okay. Is that what I originally purchased before signing up for this class?
Probably. I think so, yeah.
Okay. All right.
Yeah, exactly.
Thank you very much.
Sure, absolutely. Thank you. We have a new member. Is Tricia here today?
Yes, I am.
Welcome. Hey, how are you? Can you introduce yourself and tell us a little bit about you and your journey to join us and what you'd like to do with this material?
Sure. My name's Tricia Lovejoy, and you guys met Richard last week. I am interested in doing coaching on creating a new story, and starting with the money story seems to be like the perfect beginning. A little bit about me is do you want me to read the bio I sent you, Dave?
However you'd like to do it, whatever would be best for you.
Okay. Well, I grew up in a rural area of Baltimore and in a lower middle-income family. I started kind of learning survival out the gate, and then after kind of being in a traumatic loss experience at 16, I just couldn't do college, so I went to Johns Hopkins Hospital and majored in radiology technology, and then from that evolved into diagnostic ultrasound, which was a brand new technology and leading edge. We started a school, the first school of diagnostic ultrasound in Baltimore, and was an instructor with that. Then I went corporate and worked in that arena and sales up until meeting Richard. And then when I met Richard at our date with Destiny, I moved into consulting and did some things with as national director of customer service. And then he and I began working together, and we've just done that ever since. So for the last 25 years, that's what we've been up to. And when we met at Date with Destiny, we always agreed to be green and growing. So that's one of the reasons we're just constantly looking at new ways, new perspectives, and are very into doing educational programs. So as ordained ministers and success coaches, you know, we're currently helping entrepreneurs with the unique business model. And with that organization model, we also do the associated tax returns, which is there that create the maximum master tax income. So this is something that we want to continue to expand the scope of working with money and maximizing dollars and getting into what the new stories are, because we do have clients who say, you know, can you help us? You know, my husband and I aren't on the same page, or can you help us get there faster? You know, uh-huh. There's all kinds of, you know, questions that come into play with helping these people. So we think that after, you know, starting to work with John again and discovering your work, that's what's led us into this particular niche and this event.
Well, terrific. Congratulations on your successes and welcome. It's great to have you here. I believe you're the first couple I've known who met at a Tony event. I'm a huge Tony fan, but I've not known anybody who's met and gotten married at a Tony event before. You know, my wife has been. I've sent my two stepdaughters. I'm a huge fan. So that's interesting that you guys met there and you've been together ever since.
Yeah, and I tell everybody it's corny but true, because this weekend that he does, or used to be a weekend that he did for Date with Destiny, and that's, you know, where Richard became my Date with Destiny. So
Was it a 4-day deal then when you did it?
It was. Yeah, kind of 3.5. Mm-hmm.
That's terrific.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And we've been together ever since, so there you go.
Yeah. So you and Richard work together collaboratively with clients?
Yes, we do.
Okay, excellent. Well, super. It's great. It's great to have you. Richard, bring us up to date. What's going on with you?
Hi, everybody. It's Richard. first of all, it's wonderful to have Trish as officially a part of the group. Secondly, reading this information has just opened me up in terms of, you know, understanding that the plot I've been running is a plot that significantly needs to be changed. and I was up till 3 this morning studying this information and answering all the questions and making notes, and I only got about halfway through the assigned portion of section 2, but the one thing that really struck me, because of what happened with my father and my uncle in terms of being rejected and abandoned, that if you firmly believe you will be rejected or abandoned, you will either choose someone who will enact it or you will act in a way to generate that response. Because that's my belief system, and that's what I've done my entire life. I mean, I've made a lot of money, and I've lost a lot of money. And I've always understood that it was tied to that, but I didn't understand how that was paramount in terms of in my mind constantly, and I was living that. I mean, I was creating it and living it over and over and over again. So.
Yeah. That insight is really remarkable from the work you're doing, yeah.
Yeah, we have about 70, 75 clients located all across the United States. Most of them we've never met in person. They're all through referrals. And a lot of them are at the points in their lives that they're wondering if the story they're living is the story they want, even though they're successful. Defined that way, they don't feel fulfilled. And it really is, this work is going to really help us expand into that much more fully and also to take it out to even many more additional clients.
What is the essence of the work that you do with a typical client?
Well, it's a typical client. First of all, about 80% of our clients are women. We got hooked into a direct sales line of business, which we were buying products from. I was approached to start a CPA firm for someone, and I looked at the opportunity and says, no, I'm not interested, but could I take on these clients and do the work for you? That's how I got involved in it. And basically what it is, it's most of them do not have a corporation. We set up a subchapter S corporation. We virtually eliminate the self-employment tax. We create what's called a family limited partnership, which holds the home. We create a pension limited partnership, which leases equipment back to the subchapter S corporation through an interim corporation. And all that does is it really creates maximum after-tax income, and so that they can use that income to enjoy their lives more fully and also to pay down their debt or whatever their goals are. And then they can begin to look at money differently. And we've helped, I would say, virtually 50% of our clients in terms of paying off their homes and looking at their life entirely differently.
That's a fascinating niche and offering. I can see where it would be of tremendous value to people.
The interesting thing is we save them more money the first year in terms of our setup cost than what we charge. So it's kind of a win-win-win, and that's what we always want to create.
That's a terrific return on investment. That's great. Wow, that's impressive. Well, that's great. I'll be interested to see what both of you think about how you might find this material and work and if it can be a benefit to those clients and as you expand.
We already see it. I mean, it's just like we were just, talking with each other. Look, we can use it here. We can use this with that client. We can use that with this client. And what we want to figure out is how we're going to take it out to expand it instead of one client at a time, to do it on a more of a group basis to help more people. So that'll be my next. And the work with John Asaroff has really opened us up. We're doing Winning the Game of Money 3.2, and we're in week 9 right now.
Yeah.
So that's really helped too in terms of working with the intersizes and the videos and the other information that he has available.
Yeah, he's got terrific information. Now, that's great. That's excellent. Well, that's super. Anything that any of you would like to talk about or ask or bring up, any challenges in the reading or working with clients, anything that would be helpful for us to discuss before we move into the material?
I have one point, and that's the fact that this is a lot of stuff to go through in 12 weeks.
Yeah, I know. Mm-hmm. I know.
And that's because, I mean, I thoroughly want to go through this stuff and understand it. I mean, I could read the 62 pages, but that's just reading them, and I want to do much more than just read them. I mean, I want to study them, see how I can implement them, make notes, cross-reference pages, and all of that stuff, and it's really difficult. I mean, like I said, I got through maybe page 27 of the 62 pages for this section. I know those well. However, there's a whole bunch of other stuff, and then I got to be ready for next week. And it's like, wow.
Well, here's your break. I'm glad you reminded me. Next week, I'm going to be in Boston presenting a live workshop for the New England ICF group. So we will not meet next week. So we'll meet 2 weeks from today. And I appreciate you reminding me. So there'll be a week to catch up, but I hear you. I know it's a lot compressed into the time period. I'm certainly open to any suggestions any of you have about that. I get it, and I know that what I add during the seminars is a lot too, because that's compressed. There's so much I want to add to expand and apply. And look at update of research and that sort of thing, but I know it adds to the intensity of the material. So I know it's more than you can really metabolize, you know, step by step in this way.
Dr. Dave.
Yeah.
I have a question and a suggestion.
Okay.
Let me do the suggestion first. At some point, and maybe I'm not right on this. Do you think going over case studies and then applying it to the work and the workbook and the roadmap for success and all that is in the binder would help take theory and put it to practice and perhaps might generate conversation and questions and discussion? That's the suggestion. And then my question is, as I work at my bio, for the class I want to teach, of course, they're asking for a program description, but also a bio. Two things, I guess. The difference between a mentor and a coach would be my first question, if you would distinguish the two differently. And then the second question, if I was going to speak to the training I'm doing with you, what is your comfort level in terms of how you would want that represented? Mr. Ladadio is training with Dr. Dave Kruger on developing, you know, a new money story. What are you most comfortable with?
All right, good questions, and I've got it. So,
okay.
To your suggestion, we will begin certainly with your roadmap case studies that you'll do either on yourself or on a client, and have each of you scheduled to present them during our class time to discuss. Now, I want to preserve this time at the beginning, especially the times that we don't do a roadmap case study, to look at anything that comes up in your work with clients, anything that you'd like to discuss, any challenges, vignettes, issues, and to look at cases if you'd like to do that. So it's totally open for that. We'll have to look at the timing of that and to do that in a more succinct way, but I think it can be something that can be of benefit to all of us to do that. I know the roadmap case studies will be of significant benefit to you, and I think us hearing it will be stimulating and useful for us as well. So we will actively address that ongoing and do it in a more formal way with the roadmap case studies, but informally through discussions and whatever would be helpful for you to bring up.
Okay.
Now, did that answer that question or that suggestion?
It did, yes. Thank you.
Now, classically, a mentor is someone who has expertise in a particular area and passes that on to subordinates. For example, I have done a curriculum and do this regularly to work with organizations to develop an internal mentoring program to utilize the tools, methods, and principles of mentor coaching to benefit. In other words, to add to things as simple as conversational intelligence, social and emotional intelligence in conversations with other people. So there, you know, mentors can be informed about a number of things. Coaches generally do coaching and not mentoring. They're not content experts. They're not somebody who operate in a consultant model. We operate in a model of collaboration and co-development of new stories. Now, I call myself a mentor coach, so I can get away with doing whatever I need to do to help my client achieve his or her goals. So whether I'm working with someone who's a professional who's developing or expanding a practice in coaching or with executives or whomever, I bring everything I have and know and will apply it, not to ghostwrite the story of the client or to tell them what they should do, but to do everything possible to facilitate and catalyze their success. And I'm very clear about keeping the client as point of reference, not me or problem solving as the point of reference. And that's a key element in mentor coaching or in coaching, is keeping the client as point of reference, not running in a play or problem solving in the sense of giving somebody answers or being a consultant as a content expert. Now,
I got it.
Okay. Mm-hmm. The title is New Money Story Mentor, and that's trademarked, as you see, and the New Money Story, and the designation is licensed and specialty certified.
Perfect.
Now, license simply means that you have a license to use the intellectual property, and you can co-brand the material and use the material in your practices that would benefit you and your clients, and that's part of what I do in protecting the brand and maintaining the license, doing the continuing education of people who maintain their license and continue to use the material. We meet, as I've mentioned, in quarterly mentor groups. I do white papers and various things, and I'm available ongoing to consult with people to do whatever possible and to make the products available in a way that's usable to them. So does that answer that question, Tom?
It does. It gives me the words to use in my bio. Perfect.
Okay, great, yeah.
Thank you.
Okay, you bet. Okay, I'm going to move us to our material in order to preserve just a little bit of time at the end for discussion. So I'm going to put us on lecture mode. We're going to talk about the first three steps of the roadmap today to look at translating money meanings. The first three steps to recognize, own, and assess your money story. So we've discussed your money story and the concept of writing a new story. We're now going to look closely at how to do that, how to translate money meanings and the principles and practice of change step by step. These three components, recognizing authorship, owning your story, and assessing the plot and the storylines, and the exercises for each, are a systematic examination of awareness. Insight and understanding initiate a mindset, but they're only a beginning. Understanding an old story doesn't create a new one. Coming to the end of the past to end an old story is important, but it's not enough, which is why we need the next four steps that we'll consider in subsequent seminars. the actual implementation of the ideas can be challenging because it often requires us to change the way we think about money in three ways: breaking bad or even just simply outdated habits, developing new ones, and remaining disciplined over the long haul no matter what. So let's briefly, as a sort of prerequisite, talk about operating systems. Your money story has an internal operating system with a set of beliefs and assumptions that inform your behaviors. We're about to deconstruct that system in order to study it, understand it, and for you to decide if and where it needs editing or updating. Step one, recognize authorship of your money story. Remember this premise. Every moment we actively construct what we think, feel, and experience. Every day begins a fresh page. Each is a choice. The dramas of everyday life don't simply affect us, they're created by us. Yet so often the story closest to us, our own, is the most difficult to know. So how do you tell your money story to yourself in order to know what to keep and what to change? So I see four principles in recognizing authorship. First principle, our experiences are always consistent with our assumptions. And that's because our beliefs write the software of our behavior. We see what we believe, and we're always right because we write the story. Here's a brief story to illustrate this. This happened a number of years ago. It's out of Oxford in England. Two anthropologists were chosen to enter separate, essentially identical ape colonies to live and observe for a year. They each had remarkable similarities of personality, philosophy, training, education. The two anthropologists entered the ape colonies, no communication whatsoever, and then emerged a year later to compare notes. They expected remarkable similarities, but instead found really essential discrepancies. One anthropologist, after an initial period of transition, was accepted by the apes, integrated into the colony, achieved a comfort and a unity with the apes, got remarkable data. The other anthropologist never got beyond the social periphery of his colony. He remained careful and vigilant, right on the cusp of conflict usually, never achieved that harmony. The two anthropologists and their teams could not understand the discrepant results or find any reasons. They puzzled for months. And they finally found one difference. The anthropologist, who was the uncomfortable, careful outsider, had a gun. Now, his gun never showed. He never used it. The apes never knew he had it. But he knew he had it. He knew if things got tough, he had an out. The anthropologist, who had no gun, instead had a commitment. He knew from the beginning he would either make it or not on his own. So in retrospect and reconstruction, each of their assumptions created the reality that they experienced. We tell our story, then our story tells us. A belief is the mind's command to the brain. With the same belief, you'll continue to have the same results. If you change your belief, you can have different results. Second principle. We don't see things as they are. We see things as we are. Our beliefs become our reality. Even some things you have to see in order to believe them, and have to believe them in order to see them. Our possibilities are always a manifestation of what we allow ourselves to consider. Even a story itself can define what's possible. In centuries, and you guys know this story, in centuries of recorded time, no one ran the mile in under 4 minutes. It was impossible. Then Dr. Roger Bannister broke the four-minute mile in 1954. Within the following 18 months, 12 other runners broke the four-minute mile as well. The obstacle of the impossible could no longer be constructed. And today, this is commonplace. When the mindset of what's possible changes, reality changes as well. The beliefs within us, our own internal map of reality, determine our perception of what surrounds us, including what and how we select, register, and process. We construct our storylines from these premises. Money depends on the meaning we give it. Money doesn't know who owns it any more than war bonds knew about the war. Some examples of beliefs about money. Well, I wasn't supposed to have a lot of money. Even though I'm wealthy, I'm supposed to act like I don't have much. If I spend on myself, I'm selfish. I'll keep some of what I spend a secret even from my spouse. I feel ashamed of my debt, so I'm not going to think about it. I'm not even going to be aware of how much I have without that even being a conscious choice. And here's a summary statement from Hamlet. There is nothing either good or bad, but thinking makes it so. So we have to bring our beliefs about money, finances, wealth, into conscious focus to assess how well they work for us. And as we touched on last time, to look at knowing both the surface story, what's conscious and logical and intellectual, and the shadow story, all of the assumptions and the beliefs in this operating system, most of which is not conscious at all. The choices we make, for example, as parents, are models that our children emulate. They look, experience, they take unconscious notes. Those notes get passed on. So too with clients, with colleagues. And we know how many beliefs and behavior patterns are downloaded during the first years of life without even conscious recognition. Same in an ongoing way each session we have with the client. Here's an example. I received this correspondence from a reader of The Secret Language of Money shortly after it came out. He recognized how much he attributed to money as if it were an entity with a mind and power of its own. Here are some of his thoughts. Money could make me feel sad. When I was a kid, I saw my mom crying when we had none. I felt scared when we had no money. Money could make me feel bitter because no matter how hard anyone worked, I still felt poor. Money could make me feel sick when I think of the ability it has to rule me. Feeling guilty was another emotion I had to deal with. Now that I'm a multimillionaire, I still feel that I don't quite deserve it. I love money, yet I hate money for making me feel I can't live without it. I don't want to be mastered by it, yet I am. I don't want to admit this, yet I know I'm setting myself free by admitting it. And I think if you haven't looked already, you might enjoy in the section of Successful Life Story Transformations, the ebook that I sent that's of the roadmap case studies, there's an entire section on money stories and an introduction to that section that I've written. Third principle. A new story can occur by living, only by living in the present moment. Social scientists, for example, have discovered that when you measure people's present intentions, you affect their future behavior. When people are asked what they intend to do, they're more likely to act according to how they answer. When you ask people the day before an election if they intend to vote, it increases their probability of going to vote by 25%. A study of 40,000 people asked, do you intend to buy a new car? The question increased purchase rates 35% over the next 4 months. Other behaviors with increased frequency, asking if people intend to eat certain foods, to diet, to exercise, to regularly fund retirement plans. The stated mission is most powerful when it's coupled with a specific action plan. Principle 4, our minds seek closure and infer causality whether or not it's accurate. I want to illustrate this principle with a study that had some remarkable findings. I want to introduce this in the form of a quiz. A couple of you have heard me give this quiz before. The Wharton School of Business surveyed several thousand professionals on their fees If someone accepts or declines your professional services, which of the following do you think has the highest impact on their decision? The answer is the same reason for both accept or decline. Is it credentials, reputation, years of experience, amount of the fee, or state of the economy? Jot down your answer. The answer, this is a trick question, it's none of the above. It's how you state your fee clearly and confidently. Confident is a state of mind. States of mind are contagious. The credibility of professionals is hurt if they're fuzzy about fees. It damages the trust that a client has. And for most people, the issue isn't whether fees are high or low, but that the professional is clear, direct, specific, and especially, above all else, confident about recommendations and fees. Think about any other professional you go to for help, and think about the role of the confidence of that professional as they engage with you and what an essential component that is. So, no matter how capable you are, clearly discuss your fees and confidently make your recommendations. And here's what I think is an explanation. We know that states of mind are contagious, midbrain to midbrain. That's especially applicable with subliminal language. A series of studies reported by Dr. Dan Gilbert at Harvard showed volunteers' words appearing on a computer screen for a few milliseconds. Now, this was such a short time that they were unaware that the words were shown. They couldn't even pick them out or guess from a multiple choice. They appeared like 1/50th of a second, yet they were influenced by them. For example, when the word hostile was flashed, volunteers judged others more negatively. When the word elderly was flashed, they would walk more slowly. When the word stupid was flashed, they would respond and perform slightly less well on tests. Now, when these volunteers were later asked why they judged or walked or scored the way they did, we know that they didn't know, but they would always make some reason, some plausible reason, to make it make sense. For example, the ones who walked a little bit more slowly, at first they denied it. And then when they were shown the film that before and after that they walked more slowly, they would come up with some reason that, well, you know, I've been jet lagged because of travel, or I haven't slept well, or I've been tired lately and had a lot of projects. Even when they were told the reason of the subliminal program, and they would say, no, that didn't have an effect. It's because I was jet-lagged. Each was unaware of the fact that they were falsely attributing cause and effect. Now, these findings demonstrate the desire we have to bring closure. Our minds want to create a complete story by a causal explanation that infers both closure and a sense of effectiveness. Complete trumps accurate. And our brains want to end any dissonance by imposing certainty. This is why we rationalize or justify or do any number of other mental gymnastics that can bring closure without ownership or growth, kind of like a finish without an ending. So, I'd suggest that you do the four exercises of step one to be sure you get the foundation of really recognizing your money story and your authorship of it. And remember, the basic ideas of any story plot simply the core themes and storylines of money stories that inform what you look for and how you attribute meaning to what you find. And the storylines, your money story is your self-statement. Every time you make, use, or save money, you're making a self-statement. Step two, own your money story. I would suggest especially to review the assumptions and motivations that construct storylines the exercise on page 2.5. From an infinite sea of possibilities, our beliefs determine what we see and how we process it. This is our software package. Adding more information to the million bits of data that we process daily, like a new diet or health club membership, is not likely to have impact unless you change the software. A common example of that is for people who lose significant weight, 30 or more pounds, 95% of them gain that weight back plus a pound or two. The reason? They don't change their body image. They don't change the software that determines what their body will be. They simply change behavior, but without that core change of software of identity, then they're going to revert back. We'll return to that when we look at the final step of Program New Identity. Step two, to continue. From an infinite sea of possibilities, we have our software determining, as I mentioned, what we see and how we process it. What that means is that beliefs drive behavior. Behavior drives performance. That's an equation that I think can be useful in working with clients, because if performance is compromised, then look at the antecedent, at the behavior, to look at what behaviors need to be changed. If a behavior is ineffective or not working, look at the antecedent there, the belief, because it's the belief that drives the behavior that drives the performance. And you'll see in the workbook some examples of empowering beliefs. I can make the money I need. I will find a way to love my work. And some examples of limiting beliefs that can influence both reality, perception, and behavior. I can't find the time to exercise. I don't have enough experience. I don't make enough to save anything. Each one of these, in my view, is a coachable moment. Each one of these, because someone is constructing their storyline. I can't find time to exercise. That's not the way to do it. You create time. You create a story that has exactly what you want and need it to be. It's not there until you create it. And notice that these examples include a variety of responses, behaviors, reactions, even complex patterns. So first we have to recognize each experience as a choice instead of just the way things are. So a fundamental precept of this step, owning your story, is this. Whatever you experience, you either create or you accept. So let's apply that notion by looking at some different aspects. First, point of reference. The point of reference is a basic component of story writing. People who don't own their stories have usually an external point of reference. This premise can include passivity or resignation. Their theme can be helplessness. They may transfer responsibility to someone or something outside themselves. They react to situations they're in. And again, every one of these examples that I'm about to give, the typical characteristics, coachable moments. That's why I have an agreement with each client that I can interrupt them at any time, and they can interrupt me. So here are some examples of an external point of reference. They feel as if they have little or no control over things. Life is just happening to be reacted to. Well, there's nothing I can do. They're vulnerable to the responses of others. Their language can even absolve them of responsibility. She makes me so mad. They focus on responding rather than creating. Well, I have to do this. They see themselves as unchanging. Well, that's just the way I am. Or using a composite of behavior as if it were an identity. Well, I'm a procrastinator. They believe that they can only change things by changing the outside source or person. And when they experience a symptom in their body, they may medicate it away. That's like seeing a warning light on the dash of your car and disconnecting it rather than pursuing the problem. Now, contrast that those with an internal point of reference, this is what we coach toward. They see their authority as their own. Their premise is acceptance, ownership of responsibility. Their theme, because of that, is effectiveness. They know that at least since adulthood, they write their own stories. So here are some characteristics. They recognize accountability for their own lives. They're proactive. They plan. They look around the corner. When experiencing an unpleasant result, they examine the chain of events that generated that result, then look for alternatives. If it doesn't work, do something else. When they see a result that doesn't work, they simply decide not to continue. They decide what to change and initiate that change. They also realize the menu of choices is created. You can choose, and you can choose how you choose. And here's another aspect for us to consider, to recognize active versus passive positions. And this is important because we will hear someone's position vis-a-vis their own authority in terms of activity versus passivity about themselves and their construction in their language. I ran out of time, so it couldn't work out. I can't seem to put money in a retirement plan. It just seems to keep happening. Remember the anthropologist. The idea of a gun was enough to change everything. He had an out. Passivity is an out. I heard this in person recently from a prominent colleague, neuroscientist Dr. Bruce Lipton. 95% of people have absolutely no genetic basis for their unhappiness, their fears, or what they're taking medication for. Passive positions disown the feeling, thoughts, or action as an act of creation, as if the feeling you create makes you its victim. We touched on this earlier, last time. And a story can become an identity. I'm a risk taker. I'm a bargain hunter. And it can take on a life of its own. Someone creates credit card debt and then personifies it to see themselves as a victim of its demand and threat, a victim of its influence to decrease a credit score, even to take on a life of its own, as if the company that agreed you to loan you money on your word to pay it back suddenly has a malevolent attempt and intent. And I'd suggest review the exercise 17 Common Money Storylines and examine the storylines as objectively as possible, not to judge or criticize yourself, but to inform. So, with the first two steps, once recognizing and owning your money story, step three, assess your money story plot and storylines. A belief or a fact is an anatomical reality in the brain. It's part of a neuronal network. It's a physical fact. This is not something I learned in medical school. This is not something any of you learned anywhere else. This is something we've only known really very recently. What this means is we can't present a simple explanation and have it overwrite what's already there as an anatomical reality. You can't list three reasons that something's wrong and expect it's going to rearrange somebody's neural networks and pathways. But change can occur. It's a process, though, not an event. It's an inside job. This is part of what we do in catalyzing change as mentor coaches, to perturbate a closed system, to look at beliefs to see if they're limiting. What's another way of looking at this? How might those thoughts be limiting you? Who has a different perspective on this? Are there questions you're afraid to ask? What do you really want? What do you need to let go of? And there's a segment in the workbook, and I'm not going to go over it, but just to highlight it here, to distinguish and address ideals and needs. This is the exercise that is most used by me with new clients to get them to do the exercise of their top three needs and top three ideals, because this is crucial in my view in looking at planning and creating goals and strategies that needs and ideals are congruent with strategies and goals so that all of someone is going in the same direction. So let's think briefly about comfort zones again. Remember we did the thumb exercise last seminar. A comfort zone is simply a familiar pattern of behavior. It's a gradual process, but once established, it resists change. Think of a comfort zone like your home thermostat. If the temperature increases or decreases, even slightly, it signals an adjustment to return to the set point, the comfort zone. Our minds and brains both contribute to this. We even have a comfort zone with our weight. We return to the familiar even when we don't like it or when it's uncomfortable. So a comfort zone is not necessarily comfortable. It's kind of misnamed in a way. It's just familiar. It's predictable and automatic. We know the outcome. And think about how subtle a comfort zone can be in determining choices. What you eat, the difficulty of starting a new exercise program, starting a savings program, the subtle interactive behavior patterns, the subtle attachment patterns that you have in interacting with other people. So a comfort zone can show itself in patterns or storylines or recurring characters. For example, working under pressure, waiting till the last minute, creating a crisis, that can be a comfort zone in itself. Or someone can be an underdog and succeed against all odds. This can be a comfort zone when the pattern's repeated. Here's another example of a comfort zone in action. Most lottery winners manage to spend or give away their newfound winnings to return to their previous situation. In fact, in the United States, 80% of lottery winners, $3 million or more, file bankruptcy within the first 5 years. Their money changed, but their mindsets didn't. So much money moved them from their comfort zone, and they ended up returning to it. And here's another brief example. A simple Irish woman lived an ordinary life in a small village for over 4.5 decades. Then suddenly, Susan Boyle vaulted onto the world stage with Britain's Got Talent. One of the initial results is that she became overwhelmed and had to be hospitalized the day after the final competition. She, like the lottery winners, was not motivated to sabotage herself, but got on overload way beyond her comfort zone. In the beginning, departure from a comfort zone feels, by definition, uncomfortable. It's a rupture of continuity. A routine is broken. Sometimes letting go of a comfort zone occurs only when the pain is too great to remain in it. The choices we tend to make tend to be unless examined from our comfort zone. But a comfort zone can trade passion for predictability, creativity for continuity, and the new for the familiar. And remember, a habit is not a definition. It's a choice that gets repeated. So part of the assessment of your money story is to understand conflicted and contradictory storylines. When you feel with one part of the brain and plan with another, you need a map. A paradigm, also called a mindset, is a model. It's simply a theory or frame of reference. It's the way we see the world. What we perceive, understand, and interpret is our individual paradigm, our map. The paradigm is the map that explains the territory, it's not the territory itself. So with the right map, planning and strategy can make a huge difference. And we have a number of maps or paradigms in our head, storylines. We're often not aware of having them, but just assume we see things the way they are. Some very recent research has shown that the brain often operates very much like a Google map. We're introduced to a specific stimulus or scenario, and our brains boot up a map, a mindset that's matched to handle that. So we see a new stimulus, we have a new mindset. This emphasizes, in my view, the need for the continuity of a story to be sure those mindsets have a meaning, a consistency and are part of an ongoing cohesive story. A narrative. Now, a dilemma can simply mean having two or more mental maps in conflict. A simple example. If you read anxiety or uncertainty of a new experience in an old paradigm, an old model, such as anxiety equals danger ahead, or uncertainty means a wrong decision, well, it makes sense to stop. But a current paradigm may need to reframe that anxiety as really feeling a little bit different. It's the excitement and trepidation of moving ahead in new territory. And it's a signpost to progress, a validation that you're moving ahead. Another example, we need to be afraid of the right thing. We fear what's easily remembered. We fear what we can't control. It's far more dangerous statistically to be behind the wheel of a car than in airplane seat 18C, but in that airplane seat, we feel no control. It's an availability bias. It's a prediction based on greater emotional charge. Another example, smokers who are afraid of flying. Average across all participants, smoking shortened their lives by 5 years. Average across all participants, flying shortened their life by 1 day. And finally, people fear someone entering their homes and committing a violent crime more than food daily entering their bodies that clog arteries and cause heart attacks. One of the unique qualities that we have as human beings is self-awareness. Now, there are a lot of studies that show money is not related to happiness and many other things it promises or represents. But here is one relationship. The one thing that money influences for all classes and groups of people, choice. So by having this reflective capacity, this means we can learn from our experiences and from others' experiences as well. This is why we can create a new story. We are not our old story. We created our old story. We are not our habits or thoughts. We create them. We can think about these things and reflect on them. We can examine our paradigms to see if they serve us well. So we can assess our money stories to monitor our choices, to question our ideas, to probe our reasoning, and clearly and honestly ask, does it work? So this is something, this is more for the guys here, because we're inevitably the ones who don't stop and ask for direction. This is a quote from C.S. Lewis. He said, "We all want progress, but progress means getting nearer to the place where you want to be. And if you've taken a wrong turn, then to go forward does not get you any nearer. If you're on the wrong road, progress means doing an about turn and walking back to the right road. And in that case, the man who turns back soonest is the most progressive man." Notice that even Lewis said man. So we're always reaching our goals. It's just helpful to know consciously exactly what they are. So if your personal or professional life is not as satisfying or gratifying as you'd like, if you believe you haven't attained your objective, look more closely to know consciously and specifically what those goals are. You might be undermining your success by being too vague in your objectives. Do you fear specifically yet dream vaguely? And the example I used of if you want to change your body began with changing your body image. Visualize the specific image you want to achieve, your ideal body image, your true body self, not a false body self of overweight or out of shape. Then create an informed plan to get there. Your body is the projection of your mind's software. So is your savings and bank account. Listen carefully to the language you use in regard to your goals. If you say you'll try to reach a goal, you may be protecting yourself from anticipated failure. Trying immediately says there's not a full commitment. It's a potential diversion to other alternatives against failure. You know the words of somebody not committed. I'll try, I should, I ought to, I know I need to. Those build in a takeaway attraction to create an out. when someone says, I'm going to try to quit drinking, you know they're going to keep drinking. Here are the words of someone committed. I will. So, to create a new story, how we tell our stories of the past will shape our future. Some stories get told so often they achieve the status of becoming a personal myth, if I were just loved enough, or if I just had enough money. So, you can always know the difference between dosing and timing from avoidance. That's important to know, and to, at times, challenge a client. To know the difference between dosing, timing, and titrating something, which is a plan, from procrastination or from avoidance. The choices generate the moment-by-moment life you create. The programming of your internal map of reality, your software, determines how successful that would be. At any moment in time, neural networks and pathways are influenced by three factors: genes, experiences, and focused attention. Regardless of someone's unique brain architecture and individual complexity, these three factors intersect at any moment, at any nanosecond. DNA downloads its information from expression of its code. We now know it also goes in the other direction. Our experiences, our beliefs, can turn genes off or turn them on to determine the major extent of the expression of much DNA-based information. That's how powerful a new story can be. So two final thoughts. One is simply another perspective on these first three steps. What remains unconscious will likely be attributed to fate. And secondly, schedule an appointment with yourself. Two appointments, actually. One to meditate and one to brainstorm. These are two different times because they're two different parts of the brain, two different states of mind. Here's the suggested prompt for your brainstorm session. Everyone on Earth has one thing in common. Our choices in life define us. Those who provide service to others, such as authors, money managers, therapists, leaders, teachers, coaches, especially parents, have their answers counted many times. What will yours be? Make it matter. Okay, we're in discussion mode. We don't have as much time as I'd hoped. Thoughts, questions, things that would be helpful for us to talk about? How do the first three steps sound to you as we talk about them? I know it's an intense, brief overview, but what are your thoughts?
I thought it was great. This is Richard. I thought you hit the points very, very well, and we have obviously additional homework to do, additional listening to do, but, I mean, it's really beginning to fit together.
Well, good. I think in some ways it will make even more sense after systematically through all seven steps, and then that can be synthesized and integrated in a way. But each step in itself needs to make sense too. So thanks for that feedback. Other thoughts or questions or clarifications?
It's Kim. Yeah, from your side. So when we talk about homework, we obviously, I re-listen always to the podcast that we've had tonight to find my way again. But is there other readings that we should be doing other than what's in our workbook?
Everything is there that I have in mind. The primary focus of your work that you do on your own, I would suggest to be for you to do the exercises and the work pages and the workbook component of the curriculum. Those exercises and work pages are designed to crystallize awareness, to be a catalyst for understanding more and at different levels of your money story. And it also provides a way that you can see what makes sense to you, what you'd like or how you'd like to work with clients with those, or even how you'd like to revise them. I go through a revision of this material and updating with new research and revisions, and I've incorporated suggestions from people in the past about what works better. So I'm eager to hear what works, what doesn't, and to apply the same process to this material as you do to understanding your own story. So that part, doing the exercises and work pages, I believe is most important for your own awareness of your story. Then I think it'll be much easier to facilitate others to develop their own stories.
So where did we get up to in the workbook with this evening?
Through the first three steps. Now, all of the steps, it's a huge module. Module 2 is a huge module. And all of the steps are contained within that module. So we have discussed through the first three steps. And next seminar, 2 weeks from now, we'll discuss steps 4 and 5. So that would be...
And that's it. Through page 262, would be through the first three steps.
Okay, I don't have it in front of me. I know it's in module 2 and through steps 4 and 5 to do those exercises and work pages there at this
point. I guess it is 262, and then we're going to do 4 and 5 in 2 weeks' time.
Yes, exactly. Yeah, thanks for the pages. I appreciate it.
Thank you.
Okay, well, thanks for all of your input and your energy. You make it really come alive, and I appreciate it immensely. It really adds to the meaning and the impact. So we will meet in 2 weeks. Have a great 2 weeks, and I look forward to picking up right here next time.
Absolutely.
Okay.
Dr. Dave, before you go.
Appreciate it. See you now.
Thanks.
Dave.
Bye.
Dr. Dave?